Welcome back to Made in March. Today is Tuesday, April 5th, the day after Kansas Jayhawks been crowned as national champions of college basketball this year. They cut down the nets last night, boys.
Yeah, and in 2020, when the tournament got canceled, they were the number one overall seed and probably the favorites to win it all. So
yeah, so we have got a lot to recap here. I mean, we haven't released a podcast since our bracket breakdown, so we're going to probably need to provide some answers. I don't think any of us had good brackets. I know mine was in, like, the 7th percentile or something terrible.
Me and Wes were doing about 31, somewhere around there.
So it just goes to show, you can watch as much college basketball as us, but at the end of the day, picking a bracket, a lot of times it's
not easy.
Not an easy thing.
It is not easy.
So, obviously, we've got a ton to recap, but we're just going to sort of hit the main bullet points first and then maybe give out some awards at the end of the podcast and then just start shooting everything here. So let's start out with the national championship game last night, 8-seeded North Carolina versus 1-seeded Kansas. Thoughts?
North Carolina had a magical run. And now people are going to say, yeah, I saw it coming, whatever, but they're still an 8-seed. Like,
I disagree with that.
I 100% disagree.
I know they had a tough path. Because they had to beat some incredible teams. They did.
What did they not show you leading up to the national championship game that showed that they were still an 8-seed?
Nothing. I'm saying go coming into the tournament, people not picking them to go far. I'm saying is like they're turned off by the 8-seed.
Okay, I suppose.
That's what I was referring to, and that like some people would say, like, you know, like hindsight 2020, obviously, like, oh, I could have seen it coming. They beat Duke at Cameron Indoor, Coach K's last home game, blah, blah, blah. And then coming into the tournament, and they said, yeah, I could have seen it coming. Obviously, that's hindsight, whatever. But at the end of this tournament, they looked like a 1-seed, obviously.
100%.
And they
put on a great game last night. I mean, they were up by 15 points at half, right?
Yeah. The game was a tale of two halves.
It was.
Total tale of two halves.
It was a game of runs.
It was, exactly.
I mean, North Carolina went on a 16-0 run. Yeah. Kansas went on a couple, I think, like 12-1 runs, 12-2 runs, something like that. But I think the difference in this game was Remy Martin.
Yes.
I mean, he hit two.
No, he hit three threes down the stretch.
Five
late in the game.
Two really tough threes and then a left-handed fading away floating layup over Baycott.
Yeah.
And if Agbaji didn't get player of the tournament, obviously they're probably going to give it to him because he's been the best player in Kansas.
The face of Kansas.
I mean, but I would have been surprised if Remy Martin would have gotten that award, in my opinion, because he's had a couple games where he's had 8 points, whatever, but he's had some 20s also in there.
Yeah.
And his totally been the spark that this team needed to kind of push them over the edge.
100% was. My main takeaway from the game, honestly, was that North Carolina, they were up by 15.5, and even still at the end, they lost, sure, but they only lost by 3 points. And they did it shooting as inefficient as they've shot all tournament. Like, let's go read off some field goals here. Armando Baycott, he was 3 of 13. Brady Manick was 4 of 8. You know, that's fine. RJ Davis, 5 of 17. Caleb Love, 5 of 24.
The total stats on that, Baycott, Davis, Love combined 13 of 51 from the field for a 25% field goal. And those are your three main shot takers, you could say. Obviously, Manick is a good scorer, but he's not a high-volume shooter.
He never has been.
Never really has
even
been.
Even at Oklahoma, he wasn't.
Caleb Love's a very high-volume shooter.
Yes.
And that obviously showed in the final stat line. But
yeah, I mean, I thought both coaches, incredible year. Hubert Davis,
cool.
First year at UNC. And he,
not enough can be said about that. I mean, first year, I was joking around when I was watching the game with Roy Williams in the stands. I was like, what do you think good old Roy's thinking? You know?
Yeah.
He's thinking,
first year, he's coach like, takes over and he makes it to the national championship game, almost wins.
Yeah. He's like, thank God I retired because my time was up. That's what he's probably thinking.
I want to throw this out there, too. Dawson Garcia sat for the majority of the season with family-related issues.
Yep,
we saw Dawson Garcia at Marquette. He can play. Yes. He would have been huge in this game when Leakey got into foul trouble and when Baycott got dinged up on that last possession.
Yeah, because it's known that, you know, while North Carolina, they looked like a one seed at the end of the year because they absolutely did. The one thing that they really did lack was depth.
No depth. They're a five-man rotation.
And then Puff Johnson maybe can give you minutes. Normally he's not as good as he was in the national championship game. Needs to be said. He averages what? 2 points a game,
2.9
something like that.
Per game.
So he's not a real good.
He's
piece.
Not. I think he would have 10 or something like that. I don't know.
He had 11 points.
He had 11 points. He's not going to give you that. So I don't think North Carolina had a true bench player. Dawson Garcia would have been that, and they really did need that. The reason, I mean, obviously you can take it down to the wire here. Baycott rolls his ankle. Kansas is up one, takes the ball down, dumps it into McCormack. Brady Manick is 40 pounds lighter than Dave McCormack. He stands no chance, and they get a bucket up three. So,
I mean, you look at these teams. Kansas is losing a ton of guys next year. They're going to lose a lot of guys, but obviously they're Kansas. They have a big recruiting class. But North Carolina, they can bring back RJ Davis, Caleb Love, Armando Bacot.
Yep. Yeah. I agree. And if Dawson comes back too, from his
he'll family fill in issues, a manic spot.
Not the same role, team. But
I haven't
fill that spot.
I haven't been following like which players are potentially going to declare.
That's what I was talking about.
Is anybody on North Carolina, do we think, going to declare? Maybe Caleb
Love?
Caleb Love, yeah.
But that, yeah,
Bacot has a chance, but I think he'll come back.
I haven't seen him in the first round of any mocks. Yeah, I think he's he can make him he can better himself and better his draft stock next year, where it'd be worth it to come back to potentially get in the first round.
And we're talking about North Carolina a lot here, and rightfully so. Insane run they went on. But let's talk about Kansas for a little bit, because I honestly feel like I'm not a huge Bill Self guy, but I feel like sometimes he gets unnecessarily crapped on, when every year Kansas is really good. They're always near the top of the AP poll. They're almost always in the Sweet 16 and further. You know, it's kind of cool to see Bill Self get that second ring, because that's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're a great, well-rounded team. I mean, offense, defense, they got depth. And Bill Self, I thought, did a really, really good job coaching. Obviously, he came back from 16 points.
I will say the one thing he didn't do good coaching was that inbound blow with about 3 seconds left running.
Yes.
Was it Harris up the sideline?
But if you look at when North Carolina went on their 16-0 run, Bill Self did everything to try and find the right guys. I mean, he brought in freshman, I think his name's KJ Adams. He brought in Jalen Coleman-Lance. He's just trying to find the right guys to play against UNC. So credit to Bill Self. He made phenomenal adjustments, obviously, to come out strong in the second half. They really attacked the lane in the second half, whether it was on post-ups or attacking the lane. Got UNC in a lot of foul trouble.
To go from scoring 25 and a half to 47, I mean, that's...
And Kansas did
That's credit to Bill
Kansas
Self.
Did that all tournament. Their last three games, I believe, in the second half, they shot over 57% from the floor in all three of those games.
That was set at the end of the game, and that was a pretty crazy
stat. And I'm going to go out there and say it, Troy. I know you're not the biggest fan of this guy. Christian Brown, severely underrated.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with that. Once again, it's a thing where I can dislike Christian Brown just because he's such an unlikable kind of guy out there. But I can, you know, game recognize game. We'll just put it that way. I remember when Christian Brown was a freshman coming off the bench for Kansas, getting about 12 to 15 minutes. I think I was, I don't want to toot my own horn here. Maybe it was someone else. But I'm pretty sure I pointed him out on this podcast saying, this guy Christian Brown, he could be really good for Kansas in the years to come. And boy, was he ever.
He was kind of the all-around player that they kind of needed.
Yeah.
He was a good rebounder and honestly probably
great
the best
rebounder,
passer, too, in my opinion. Ochai kind of, I feel like he needed that. He's more of a move without the ball.
I agree.
Rather than off the bounce, off the dribble.
So should we transition into some of these Final Four games? Because obviously we need to talk about Duke North Carolina meeting in the Final Four.
One of the biggest storylines.
Sending Coach K packing. But that's probably one of the most historical games college basketball has ever seen.
That was an awesome game.
Did you guys know that Duke and UNC have never faced in the tournament? Did you ever hear that?
Did you know it was Coach K's last year?
Nope.
Crazy.
I know.
How is nobody talking about this?
No one is talking about this. Obviously, we're being sarcastic, but that was all over the press. But it is when you actually think about it, it is wild that those two historic programs who have made the Final Four a lot have never met, which is that is crazy to me. I mean, obviously, a lot of times they find themselves in one seeds, and they find themselves on opposite sides of the bracket where they'd only meet maybe in the championship kind of type thing. But it is still wild to think about that those two storied programs.
And I mean, there was so much lead up, so much hype to this game. I don't know if you guys know Eric Church, the country singer. He had a big time concert scheduled for that night, but he's been a Tar Heels fan his whole life. So he actually canceled the concert 2 days before it started and just basically told his fans, like, listen, I know that this is a jerk move. I know that it's going to upset a lot of people. I know it's not easy, but I need to watch my Tar Heels play Duke in the Final Four game.
That's respect.
It is respect. If I was going to the concert, I would be a little pissed. But at the same time, personally, if I had a concert scheduled for that day, I'd probably skip it to watch this game. That's how hype it was.
And it lived up to it.
Yeah. And Wesley, I remember talking to you before the game started, not to just talk about the lead up, but we were just saying, I hope that this is a competitive game. Like, I just want it to be a good competitive game, which it was.
And it was honestly more than that. It fully lived up to the hype. Obviously, probably tons of people tuning in everywhere. Caleb Love had some insane shots down the stretch. I mean, with a minute and a half left, he probably hit a three from like 27 feet or something.
Yeah.
I mean,
and the picture of that three, that's a top 10 college basketball picture of all time.
Yeah, that was a phenomenal game. Paolo Banchero had a great game, 20-10. He had a double-double.
Trevor Keels had a really good game off the bench, too.
Also, Theo John was giving Duke some really good minutes.
I mean, we all know that the refs hate Theo John.
There's been a lot of discourse on this. We've talked about this a lot. But I've never seen some player get reffed more unfairly in not just college basketball, not just basketball, any sport than Theo John.
I mean, Baycott, he's posting up and he swings his elbow right in Theo John's shoulder. And it takes a lot of force to knock down Theo John. He got knocked down and somehow was fouling Theo.
You can't explain it.
You can't.
These are things you can't make up.
Yeah, it's crazy. But he was giving Duke good minutes. It was just a real good game. But at the end of the day, North Carolina pulling it out. Coach K, his last game, loses to North Carolina.
North Carolina. Oh, that is just like, let me drink your tears, Duke fans. Yeah. Please.
And let me drink your tears. I saw Duke fans on Twitter being like, well, like, we have more rings in the past X amount of years. And it's like, okay, really? Like, you're going out so sad. Like,
yeah.
Like, North Carolina bested you. Like, just take it like a freaking man and stop, like, being a little whiner.
And exactly. And they're going to whine and complain, but their team is getting another good recruiting class next year. And I saw that they were one of the favorites to win it all last year. Early prediction.
And we also, I think going into the game, people thought that the refs would maybe be on Coach K's side.
Everybody was freaking out about that.
I didn't really think so. You guys disagree. I thought it was a pretty well-refed game, even though Bo Borowski was on the call.
As soon as that happened, I saw the tip-off, and I looked to the sideline, and I saw Bo Borowski with the whistle in his mouth. I just had a pit in my stomach. It was like, oh, no. I know how this goes. I've seen this way too many times. But credit to the crew. They didn't swing in any way that was unfair. So
yeah, it's a good game. You guys have anything else to say, or should we go on to the other Final Four game? Because I know you really want to talk about the Kansas-Nova game, Alex.
Yeah, we can move on.
So, Alex, your thoughts on the Big East champions getting to the Final Four? Obviously, hindered, not having, I would say, their second-best player. I'm sure you probably agree.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's obviously a huge loss, but you look at the scoreboard, and Kansas won by 16, but this game was a lot closer. I mean, Kansas got out early to probably a 16-point lead, but Nova had it to like 5-6 points multiple times, and they just couldn't get over that hump. Jermaine Samuels didn't have his best game. They relied on Gillespie a little too much, and obviously that'll happen when you're missing your second-best player.
I felt like every time Nova, you thought that they were going to fight back, Kansas would sort of then just get a few buckets and it would just kind of squash the rally.
They cut it to 5 or 6 and then Kansas would extend it right back to 12.
Yep.
And Ochai played great.
6 of 7 from 3.
Yeah.
There were 26 three-pointers made in this game between both teams. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
And I think you alluded to it earlier, either Wesley or Alex, but the three, Christian Brown hit that little turnaround sort of deep three, sick. And then he started smack-talking after it.
Yeah.
As much as I dislike Christian Brown, that was a pretty badass moment.
And people could have probably seen this coming in. Obviously, Villanova's an undersized team. They don't really have a true big man that can match up with David McCormack, and David McCormack had his way. I think he had 25 and 10 or something, somewhere around there, 25 and 9. He had his way. 10 of 12 from the floor. That's pretty much an unstoppable stat line.
Yeah, you got to feel a little bad for Nova. I mean, this year, you reach the Final Four, and Justin Moore gets hurt at the very end of that Houston game.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, last year, Gillespie tore his what? Achilles, ACL, pre-tournament.
Yep.
It's tough, but, you know, if anything, I feel like it just shows that, you know, Villanova making another Final Four. Tip of the cap to Jay Wright. What a coach.
Yeah.
He knows how to get it done in the big time. Mm-hmm. When the lights are bright.
Next up, I think we've got probably the biggest story, maybe second biggest story of the entire tournament. Let's talk about St. Peter's Peacocks.
They're definitely the biggest story. They have to be.
That Elite Eight game between them and UNC would have been you just knew it was a win-win because it was a phenomenal story no matter what.
Yeah, but 15-seeded St. Peter's making an Elite Eight run. Never been done before.
Never.
Couldn't be done by a cooler team either.
I agree.
You guys are going to think I'm lying, but before the tournament, I saw something on Twitter and it was talking about Shaheen Holloway, the coach of St. Peter's. and it said that he was a dark horse coaching candidate for, you know, Power 5 schools to sort of hire. And I was like, I don't even know who this guy is. I barely know what St. Peter's is. Like, I see they're a 16 seed or 15 seed, but, like, that's kind of odd. Yeah. But after watching them make their run, I fully understood why that was out there.
Yeah, something I saw before the tournament, now that you mentioned it, which was pretty funny. I was watching, like, this, it was on ESPN, I think, or ESPN2, and there were these guys in Vegas just giving their locks of the day. And this one guy, he comes on, he's like, Kentucky in the SEC final did not show up, or semifinal against Tennessee did not show up. He's like, Kentucky minus 10.5, first half against St. Peter's. They're going to come out hot, and boy, could he not have been more wrong. Yeah. He literally guy. Was like roasting the Peacocks. He's like, I mean, they're named the Peacocks. There's no way they're going to hang.
Yeah, clearly. That's like, it's kind of like an inferior mascot team name, people were thinking, but
I think that's an elite mascot team.
I know, but I'm saying, like, not intimidating. It's a great name itself. But.
And while he may not have been the best player on St. Peter's, I think all of us could actually agree that he is not. But Doug Eddard, guy with the little mustache on his upper lip, the floppy hair, he was the story of St. Peter's.
Yep, 100%. He had 20 incredible. Off the bench in the first game against Kentucky.
And making all of his free throws down the stretch.
90% free throw shooter, which was huge.
Hustling nonstop. It felt like he just had like a third lung. Just never running out of.
I mean, that team was just filled with dogs. Daryl Banks, dog. You look at Casey Ndefu, who's their big man. He's 6'7", and he's going up against guys like Oscar Tshiebwe, Zach Edey, Travion Williams.
Exactly. We
wasn't backing down.
Every game went into, we're like, oh no, St. Peter's is so outmatched. They have their big men are so much better than St. Peter's, the other team that they're playing against. That was both Kentucky and Purdue. Obviously, no one thought they would beat Kentucky, but going into that Purdue game, we're like, oh no. The double whammy, and they stepped up. Casey Ndefu with, what was he average? 2.5 blocks a game, 2.8 blocks per game.
Something like
at
that.
Like 6'7", 210 or something. That's incredible athleticism. That's crazy.
The thing that really stood out to me about St. Peter's, and I think you can really credit this to just a superior coaching job done by Shaheen Holloway, is when you see these Cinderella runs, normally when the teams get a lead like that, it's almost like they play to not lose, sort of, if you guys get my drift.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or they think to themselves, man, we're a 15 seed. We shouldn't be in this position. St. Peter's, I never really got that vibe from. It's like they were comfortable having a lead. They felt that they deserved to be there.
Mm-hmm. Especially, I saw that most in the Murray State game, probably, when they kind of held the 10-point lead for the whole second half. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Murray State's a 7 seed, so they're not a Power 5 program. But you can also say that in Purdue, I feel like they were kind of down. And in that moment, it feels like, you know, like a smaller school like that, kind of made they won't hang their heads, but they just feel like they're outmatched.
Yeah, I think
St.
Peter's like,
fought back and took the lead with a couple minutes left. And
they were down like maybe 5-6 points right before half, but then they get like a tough layup before half, and it's like, okay, like they never let themselves get down too much.
Yeah.
And when they had a lead, they weren't afraid to have a lead.
And then obviously they run UNC, but before that, I totally agree that they were not scared to just kind of keep the foot on the pedal, not just preserve the lead that they had. They were wanting to hammer down on it.
Yeah, I really love Shaheen Holloway. Some of the quotes he had after their wins, just incredible. I mean, point blank period. He's telling the reporters after they lost, we're the first 15 seed to ever go to the Elite Eight. You guys should all write about it. Like, I thought that's incredible.
Yeah.
And now he's going to coach at his alma mater, Seton Hall.
Let's talk about that real quick. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I think that's a fantastic hire by Seton Hall, by the way.
I do too.
And it was about time for Kevin Willard to go because he stunk at Seton Hall. He would never win in the tournament. I think he has like 3 tournament wins in his entire tenure at Seton Hall. And you're not going to believe it, guys, but guess who hired Kevin Willard? Maryland. They cannot get a coaching hire right at Maryland. I feel really bad for Terps fans.
And we'll see. We saw 3 players from St. Peter's enter the transfer portal.
All in one day.
Including Matthew Doug. Lee, Doug Eater, and
Daryl Banks.
We'll see if they go follow their coach play in the Big East.
I think minimum 2 of them.
I 100% agree with that. Because
if not all 3.
I think Matthew Lee will for sure.
I think at least 2 out of the 3 will follow because, you know, they're good players, but like, I don't know how many other D1 programs like would view them. I don't know. Obviously, I have no idea. I mean, I think they're solid.
Well, I think they could 100% get looks at other D1 programs.
100%. I mean, just look at five. You look at Kevin O'Banner.
I still think so.
Okay, Kevin O'Banner, in my opinion, is a different story. I would argue than those three players. Story.
Daryl Banks dropped 30 points in a game in the tourney.
Kevin O'Banner was doing that all season. Daryl Banks averaged like what, 11 or 12 a game?
He was their leading scorer. I don't know.
It with like 11 or 12. That. I mean, O'Banner was averaging 18 and 11.
You don't think that there aren't about every Power Five school couldn't find a place for a Doug Eddard on their team? I'm not saying start, but just as a guy to come off the bench, I think they're just about every Power Five program. Maybe not the Kansas, maybe not the Dukes, but they could find a place for him on their team.
But look at Joseph Yesufu transferring from Drake. He averaged what?
Well, he transferred to the national champions, Kansas Jayhawks, so that's a little bit of a different story.
Yes, fair, but I'm saying that he never saw our
court. He will play next year. He will play next year.
So maybe it was a business decision for the future.
But I still do think at least two of them follow Shaheen to Seton Hall, and if anything, that just shows how good of a coach he is. Mm-hmm. Moving on, there were still a lot of other upsets in this tournament. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to overlook them. Like, maybe not necessarily Cinderella stories like St. Peter's, but Miami is a big one.
Elite Eight run.
I'm pissed that I didn't pick Miami to beat Auburn in the second round.
I didn't even pick them to win one game, so I feel like the real fool here.
And it's like, you look at Auburn, they got absolutely exposed by Texas A&M in the SEC tournament. Yes. And what does Texas A&M have? A lot of guards, a lot of fast guards. That's exactly what Miami was. Mm-hmm. They should have given that game a second look, because looking back on it, I should have seen it coming.
I mean, Walker Kessler, let's start there. He didn't have a field goal. He had 2 points. Jabari Smith, 3 of 16 from the field, 1 of 8 from three. And Katie Johnson was the star of the three at 4 of 10 from the field.
Johnson, he sucks.
And Wendell Green was also 4 of 14 from the field. So,
but that's what happens when you put speed out there on the floor. It takes a big guy like Walker Kessler out of the game.
Yeah, it does.
Yep.
There were some there were some other teams we already talked about. North Carolina, 12 seeds. I mean, Richmond had maybe the most fraudulent 12 seed to ever win a game. I mean, they beat Iowa. Which does that surprise anyone? Like, nobody thought Richmond was good, but does it surprise any of you guys that Iowa choked and lost first round?
Never. No. Literally never. That's the most Iowa thing ever. Like, Richmond, in my opinion, was the worst 12 seed by a pretty good landslide, I'd say.
It seems like they just stumbled into a win.
Yep, exactly. I totally agree. And the only team I feel like that would do that, like, perform that bad, would be Iowa. Like, they just are noted chokers, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't seem to get it done.
And I FaceTimed Luke, Iowa fan, before the game, and he's like, "This is just a game that Iowa's gonna lose." He told me that. He's like, if you're a fan of sports betting, if you're gambling, he's like, "Iowa's gonna lose this game."
He's like,
and obviously, it's an easy thing for Luke to say because it's a win-win either way. He either wins and he's right, or he wins and his team wins. But still, that's just, I think Hawkeye fans knew that game could have gone south, because people forget they were really hot heading into March Madness.
They won the Big Ten tournament. A lot of people
picked them to go to the Final Four.
Mm-hmm. People had them winning it all. I know there were a bunch of...
Dickie V had him in the Final Two.
You know, his bracket was busted immediately.
His bracket was a stinker.
After day one. Kentucky and Iowa.
Gone.
And then we also need to talk about New Mexico State. We've got a buddy who goes to New Mexico State, upsetting UConn. Alex, you had UConn in your Final Four.
Screw the Aggies.
Teddy Buckets,
I think, had like 38.
Yeah, he was putting on
a show. I don't think there was another player on Mexico State who had more than... No, who was in double figures. I don't think so.
They're a big man.
Johnny McCants.
Johnny McCants, I think, had
Johnny
nine.
McCants is a nice player, nine. Actually.
He is. I agree.
I really like watching him play.
I was so glad that they lost in the second round to Arkansas.
It's kind of lame of you to say.
The team just pissed me off. Like,
I disagree. I think it was a really fun Cinderella story to watch.
No. That's kind of lame of you to say that you are happy Arkansas won.
I'm happy Arkansas won.
Lame, but whatever.
I mean, they did beat Zags, but I don't think that's your reasoning, so that's why it is lame. But good for New Mexico State. I mean, they make the tournament virtually every year, and every year they lose. They actually put up a really good fight, if you guys remember, a few years back. Against that Auburn team that went to the Final Four.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They arguably should have won that game, but they didn't. And I think they had lost something like 13 straight tournament games. So shout out to New Mexico State, finally getting one. Any other Cinderellas we want to mention? I guess we could talk about Michigan.
Yeah,
not really a Cinderella, but 11 seed.
Yeah, they played probably the worst 6 seed in Colorado State. Obviously, we're going to say this now. Mountain West frauds fully. locked and loaded. I rolled the Mountain West in the tournament, just loaded
it.
I
rolled the Mountain West too.
I didn't.
You had? Would you have San Diego State was your one?
No, I didn't pick San Diego State.
Did you have?
I had
Michigan, but he had Boise.
I did pick Boise. That was the only Mountain West team I picked. But
Boise or Mountain West, all three.
Yeah, I picked all three of them.
Me too.
Honestly, Colorado State, they didn't deserve to win that game. Boise didn't deserve to win that game. SDSU, they choked.
SDSU, full-blown choke.
This should be nothing new to you guys. SDSU hasn't been good in the tournament since Kawhi Leonard was on that team, so.
They would have been
good. No, they would have been great Flynn. Before. Yeah.
Yeah, they would have been. I'm sorry, but that tournament didn't happen. I don't deal with that.
No,
but the Michigan, upsetting. Not really upsetting. I think it was like a pick'em game, basically.
Yeah.
So it's not really an upset. Yeah. But they
Michigan was favored.
They were favored by like a point or something.
Favored.
2.5.
It was not. No, yes, it was 1.5.
It was, no, like it was 2.5.
I don't think so.
Yes, it was.
Well, whatever. You guys had terrible picks picking Colorado State, so good for you guys for being stinkers. But anyway, Michigan wins that game, and then they upset the Tennessee Volunteers. You guys picked to win it all.
Correct.
Thoughts, yep. Comments, concerns?
Oh, man. Hunter Dickinson had like 28 this game. He was a force. And Eli Brooks is an underrated player, in my opinion. And I feel like he kind of has been this whole season. I think he's the engine that makes that team go. But yeah, Dickinson showed up, and then he was talking some serious smack over the social media and let everybody know.
Because was Michigan the only Big Ten team to make the Sweet 16?
No, Purdue did.
Purdue did as well.
But Michigan shouldn't have even been in the tournament, if we're being honest.
Well, no, clearly they should have.
Oh, Alex. Coming into the tournament, I don't think Michigan should have made the tournament. Like, coming in when they were doing Selection Sunday.
I kind of tend to agree, because when Selection Sunday came out.
When that pick came up on the screen, I was like, what?
I didn't actually so much lose it as that they were in the tournament. I more lost it that they got a bye and Rutgers didn't. We'll get to that later, obviously. But clearly they showed that they were good enough to be good enough to
Dude, that Tennessee game absolutely sucked. Yeah. I love Kennedy Chandler. He left it all on the line, and like, Santiago Vescovi, absolute sellout. He was awful. He was terrible.
Okay, Michigan was, their whole game plan was to stop Santiago Vescovi. He took, what, 6 or 7 shots, and they did more or less stop him. Obviously, Josiah Jordan James has been a huge piece for Tennessee in the second half of the season in the SEC tournament. He's had a hot hand recently. I think he was 4-14 from the field, 0-6 from 3. So he put up a serious stinker too. Zakai Ziegler, I think, I swear to God, he missed like 2 or 3 easy layups, I think.
It was a really good game.
It was like a lose your mind layup.
At the end of the day, Dickinson was the best player on the court.
That's great.
Not much else you can say.
Yeah, and then one other game that I really wanted to touch on before we get into some awards that we're going to give out. Probably the craziest game in the tournament, most fun to watch just from like a basketball perspective.
Yes.
Baylor, North Carolina.
Hands down, the best game of the tournament.
What, like,
hands down.
I mean, Brady Manek had 27 points with like 12 minutes left in the second half. UNC's up 25.
You're thinking the game's over.
You're thinking it's over. You're like, pack your stuff, we're going home. And then Brady Manek on a box out, elbows somebody in the face, might have been Matt May or something. I don't know who it was, but he elbows somebody in the face, gets ejected, flagrant two, he's gone.
He should not have been ejected. I'll just say that.
It's an
elbow, sure, throw him a flagrant one, but he should not have been ejected.
He went high with it, so I can see where the call was made personally, but
no.
You would like to see
You said they're up 25 with 10 minutes left,
you
even
think
when
no
Brady
way.
Manek gets ejected. You think there's no way. And then Baylor does the unthinkable. They bring it all the way back, and then I'm sitting there, and I'm like, there's no way UNC wins this game, because Baylor just outscored him by 25 in the last 10
minutes.
You're
talking about when it went into overtime?
Yeah, when it went into overtime.
I thought the same thing.
There's no way Baylor loses this.
Too much
especially
going on.
No Brady Manek.
Yeah.
And somehow
dominated.
UNC pulled it out.
Yeah.
RJ Davis was huge in that game.
He was. Now I'm going to say, Baylor got into this game with some little boost in assistance from the Stripes. I'm going to say
that. I agree 100%.
This may have been, I'm going to say it, this could have been the worst ref game I saw.
It was ref ball at its finest.
This was the definition of ref ball. Any UNC fans/bettors had to be losing their minds.
Yeah.
But still, UNC could not break that press to save their lives.
It was like Wichita State versus UConn 3 years ago, if you remember that game. That we were all watching on like a Sunday at like 11 a.m.
Yep.
But, yeah. Should we get into some of our awards.
I think so.
All right. Some NCAA tournament awards.
Yeah, this is strictly for the tournament, obviously. And so we'll start off with number one, our favorite tournament moment. Leslie, we'll start off with you.
So this is going to be kind of lame. I know everybody's going to probably be saying this. But it, for me, it was UNC sending Coach K packing. Now, for you, those of you who don't know, I have been following North Carolina slash a fan for actually a decent amount of time. I actually have a picture with Roy Williams from 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So I can prove my fanhood for any
friend. I remember even back in like middle school, you'd always wrap a Tar Heels hat. So yeah, you're not saying that you're like a diehard North Carolina fan.
No,
but you got family down there.
Yes, I support them. And that was awesome. Just watching, that absolutely made my weekend. That was just incredible. Seeing it end on that stage when everybody thought that there was no way it's going to be, everybody was saying, watch out, they're going to the refs, blah, 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 whatever. I feel like people were like in a weird way doubting UNC. Obviously, UNC had been underdogs pretty much the whole tournament, even though to me, by the final four, they proved that they were pretty much a one seed. They were still 4.5-point dogs against Duke. And to just see it end like that against UNC in the final four.
Poetry.
Just poetry. Like, you cannot write it any better than that. Off into the sunset, Coach K goes, see you later.
It was awesome. That moment was a great one for me. Also, Caleb Love's dagger three against UCLA as well in the Sweet 16 was a good moment. Also, along the same lines of Wesley, Odise Tony's block for Arkansas against Drew Timmy with like 45 seconds left to send the Zags packing. Get out of here, Zags. Frauds.
No, Zags, that's another team. I don't know. I mean,
we can talk about them after our awards because I'm sure we've got a lot more to say. It's big tournament.
We can win on that.
So that's your favorite moment, Alex, sort of as well. My favorite, and this is like kind of unique, but honestly, just that first game, Michigan versus Colorado State. It was one of the few games that I even really got right in my whole bracket, more or less. But, you know, Michigan was down big. They were down like 13 points. And then all of a sudden, Michigan starts fighting back. Caleb Houston starts hitting threes. And then, what do you know? The second game starts. It was Providence versus South Dakota State. So Wesley and I, we were down in Panama City Beach for spring break. And we're at like some little tiki hut thing. We get the guy to turn on another game. And then, what do you know? The Jackrabbits start making shots. And then, what do you know? The Boise State game starting. And just having all the games come in that rush of the first round of March Madness.
Yeah.
Indescribable feeling.
When you know.
My favorite part of, honestly, all of March Madness. There were a lot of things I loved, but those first few games, just watching them before your bracket's busted, great.
It's always a leap because there's always that hope. You're like, well, what if? Well, what if? And you're like, well, this is literally never going to happen. But what if? Like, there's always that glimmer of hope. And you're just like praying that you could just make it past that first game. In these past 2 years, I have not made it past that first game.
Felt great. I was one for one to start. So, like, great feeling.
It is a good feeling.
Now let's go to the flip side of this coin. Most heartbreaking moment.
I can start this one, I guess, for the hometown Wisconsin Badgers. A heartbreaking ending. I mean, for me personally, going into that game, I'm like, this can't get drawn up any better. I think Miami had already won previous to Wisconsin playing Iowa State. So Wisconsin, had they would have won, would have played Miami in the second round. I thought Iowa State was terrible. And I thought they had a great matchup.
And you thought right, because Iowa State still is terrible.
They still are terrible.
Even in that game. I mean, Gabe Kelscher played nice, but they're still not a good team.
Yeah, and oh my gosh, it was a full sell job. It literally could have been any more perfect. They're playing in Milwaukee. They pretty much have a home court advantage, I'd say.
I was there. It was home court advantage.
And it could have been even perfect. I thought Iowa State was a bad team. Obviously, you know, there might be an asterisk because Chucky Hepburn got hurt. You know, I'm not the guy to make excuses. I could say why. I can say why Chucky Hepburn affected, but I will hold off on that. So that was the most disappointing moment for me. Seeing it being all set up so perfect. Auburn's already gone. We don't have to deal with them.
Getting a good draw.
It was just coming to Milwaukee. It was so perfect, and I was so hopeful for a nice run. And the weekend comes and it ends like that. So, sad times.
Yeah, I mean, I got a few. I know you guys are probably expecting me to say Marquette getting 30 balled by UNC in the first round.
30 balled like the first half. The second half was just a continuation.
I don't know if heartbreaking was really the word. I think I would describe it as probably depressing. That sucked. UConn losing in the first round was pretty heartbreaking. Obviously, excited them in my final four. And then Tennessee as well, losing to Michigan in the second round. That sucked.
Mine is going to come as a shock to absolutely nobody, but it would be Rutgers losing their play-in game to Notre frickin' Dame.
It was a really good game, too.
Well, it was until the clock struck until the clock struck zero. I mean, it was just so heartbreaking. You know, back and forth. Then it goes into overtime. And then in overtime, Geo Baker, this is going to be forgotten. He hit a shot from just beyond the free throw line. It was a step back two, and I'm like, that's the shot. Like, that's the galvanizing moment. Rutgers is going to clinch it out. It's like, no, it goes into double overtime. And then Ron Harper Jr. starts hitting these clutch shots, and everyone's hitting these clutch shots, but somehow Rutgers just couldn't pull it out. And it's just like, I wanted to pull my hair out before the actual tournament had even started. This was a playing game, mind you. But boy, oh boy, if that wasn't an incredibly heartbreaking moment. I mean, I had Rutgers in my Elite Eight, so I had to make some bracket additions morning after this playing game. I was like, well, I don't even know who to put in my Elite Eight now. I guess I'll just put Michigan State. That didn't work out. It's like, it was just so sad to see the boys go out like that. Like, I'm never going to see Geo Baker play another game of college basketball.
Nope.
Never see Ron Harper Jr. play another game of college basketball. I guess I'll see Headband Paul. Maybe Caleb McConnell.
Cliff.
Maybe Cliff. Cliff could low-key declare. I've heard that he's, I don't know. I'm not saying he will, but that was a heartbreaking moment, you guys. It was terrible.
It's all come down in the playing game, too, which is.
Yeah. Next up, another maybe negative one. Let's talk about our worst take of the entire bracket.
Now, we're going to start with this by saying all of our brackets were atrocious. They were very bad this year. So, I mean, for me, I think for all of us, we could probably say mostly everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I've written down on.
How many Final Four teams did we all have, right?
One.
I had one.
I had zero. I didn't even have any Elite Eight. I had zero Elite Eight.
Oh! How many Elite Eight teams did I have, right?
I think I had two or three, maybe.
Your ass did not have three.
No. Two. Who? Kansas. You had one. I think I had one.
No, you had one.
I had one too.
Trying to lie, saying you had three. I can't even deal with this guy, honestly. At least I'm honest. Like, at least I'm straight up about it. I had zero, and it's like, hand up. I had zero.
I was praying that I made
a lot of upsets this year, boys. A lot of upsets.
I could start out with the worst take, you know, since we're already in a depressing stage of this podcast. But three of the final four teams that made the final four, so not Nova, but the other three, Duke, Kansas, and North Carolina. I had each of them only winning one game in my bracket. I had Duke getting upset by Michigan State, which almost happened.
I had Kansas too.
I had Kansas getting upset by Creighton, which almost happened. And then I had North Carolina obviously only winning one game and then losing to Baylor, which almost happened. So I was close in a way.
Right on the brink.
I will give myself that. I was close in a way. I'm actually going to talk a little bit more in depth about the Creighton-Kansas game in a little bit.
That was the one I would give you the most credit on.
But I mean, three of the final four teams, I would only had them winning one game. And then the other one, Villanova, I had them winning a whopping two games. So basically, I was way off the mark on all the four best teams in the tournament. So there we go.
I mean, I can say my winner pick, same with Alex, exited in the second round. You don't like to see your winner pick going home in the first weekend. That's always a depressing feeling. I'm right there, I guess, with the Elite Eight teams. I only had Villanova winning two games and then losing to Tennessee, obviously. And Duke, I had losing to Texas Tech. So I guess I had them winning two versus one, which is really nothing. UNC, I only had winning one game. And Kansas, I did have in the Final Four. But
I mean, Wesley said it earlier, we don't like to make excuses, but Tennessee should not have been a 3 seed.
Yes, okay.
They should have been a 2 seed where Duke was, and Duke should have been where Tennessee was, and Duke should have lost to Michigan in the first round, or in the second round.
Well, then Michigan State would have beat Tennessee.
Tennessee should have been in the Final Four. But I'm not going to make that excuse, okay? You know?
You're going out so sad here, Alex.
But yeah, Tennessee was a terrible pick. UConn, I thought they were a phenomenal rebounding team, and I thought that's
where'd
how
you have
they
UConn
would
in your bracket again?
Final Four. I thought that's how they would beat a mid-major team like New Mexico State. But no, they somehow get out-rebounded. How does that even happen?
Johnny McCann.
How does that happen?
That actually that's a great point because
UConn, that's ridiculous.
That is
ridiculous. It's like their calling card, and then they get out-rebounded by New Mexico State.
Yeah,
that was. It was just horrible all around. Like, just I can't terrible. Even pick out one thing good that I did. I guess
just
Kansas Final Four.
Just a terrible Thursday for Alex.
Let's go on a more positive note. Let's talk about our favorite player in the tournament. Wesley, lead it off.
So this is going to be kind of a wild card one. This is based off of...
I went with a wild card one, too, because obviously...
This team did not play many games, and this guy really only had a good game against one team. But this one game, I was watching with Alex and our other roommate, David, down in the living room. It was Eddie Lampkin of TCU.
Oh, Eddie Lampkin was insane.
He was so fun against Arizona. He was hitting them with the baby, like rocking the baby, hitting them, you're too little. He had 20 and 12 with 10 offensive rebounds against Arizona, who is not a small team. Christian Coloco is a long guy.
And Omar Bayo.
And Omar Bayo, who it blows chunks. And also, Eddie Lampkin averages 6-6 on the year, so he went way above and beyond what...
The only thing I remember about Eddie Lampkin from the regular season was he got absolutely jammed on by someone. I don't really know how, because he's an absolute unit. But he got dunked on, and then after, it was like he wanted to fight the guy. He was so mad. So he's a firecracker out there.
Ben Mathurin, he probably the dunk in the tournament on Eddie Lampkin. It was
bad. That was
like a full really nuts in the face, dunk. Like... You're my child, Canada. It was awesome. And then Eddie answered, though, and came back and brought him right back into it. But he was an absolute... He was actually 300 and what? 20, 30 pounds coming into college, and he dropped 50 pounds to 265, 270.
He was 320.
He was literally like a lineman. He was huge. But worked his way down, and he was an absolute firecracker in the Arizona game. And I honestly think TCU should have won. Ben Mathurin hit a deep, deep, deep three to push to OT. Credit to him, but Eddie Lampkin was an absolute firecracker, I agree.
Yeah, I got two players. Isaiah Wong of Miami, he laid down an absolute hammer on Jabari Smith one game, too. He was insane for Miami. Him and Cameron McGusty both played great. My favorite player was probably RJ Davis. I don't know, he was just, I just love his gameplay. You know, he looks for that mid-range, he's really shifty, creates for his teammates. I mean, his over on rebounds hit every single game in the tournament, it felt like. I mean, he had 10 in the championship game.
Yeah, little RJ Davis having 10 rebounds.
Yeah, RJ Davis, dog. Even though he shredded Marquette. Actually, he didn't play that good against Marquette, but...
My favorite player in the tournament, I alluded to how I was going to talk about Creighton a little bit, and I guess this is my opportunity. Arthur Kaluma of Creighton. He is a freshman, and this was one of those moments where you see a freshman really sort of start to shine in March Madness. I mean, the stuff he was doing against Kansas, he was single-handedly keeping Creighton in that game.
Yeah.
Remember, when Creighton played Kansas, Ryan Kalkbrenner, the big guy that wears the nerdy glasses for Creighton, got hurt, and Arthur Kaluma had to step in sort of into that role. Not 100%, obviously, but a little bit. He had to fill in, and... He was just a beast out there. I think he must have had 10-plus boards, probably 25 points in that game. And he's a freshman. It was crazy to see as a guy who had Creighton in my Elite Eight, him just almost single-handedly keeping Creighton in that game. Also, the three-point shooting percentage kept them in that game a little bit, too. They couldn't miss from beyond the arc. But he was really fun to watch. And if you want a player to sort of keep your eyes on in the coming years, watch out for Arthur Kaluma.
Creighton... They're going to be favored to win the Big East next year.
They're bringing back almost everybody, I believe.
They're losing Ryan Hawkins and Alex O'Connell. Two starters.
Those are bigger losses than people realize.
But still, Greg McDermott, he shreds in the transfer portal. They'll get guys.
All right, we'll see.
And then they have Trey Alexander, who also missed the tournament with his broken wrist. Kaluma, Kalkbrenner, Trey Alexander.
Let's just talk about Creighton for a little bit.
Yeah, Ryan Emhard.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just talk about Creighton for a little bit because I honestly kind of want my flowers for picking them in the Elite Eight. Had Kalkbrenner not gotten hurt, I think that Creighton would have probably beat Kansas in that second round game. And you guys can laugh all you want.
Well, you picked Notre Dame to beat Alabama, correct?
No.
No.
Oh, you didn't?
I did not.
I thought you didn't. I was going to say, never mind.
What was your line of reasoning?
I was going to say Javon Quinterly would have beat Notre Dame.
Well, you can say that. I don't really care. I hate Notre Dame more than anyone at this table. So I would be glad to hop on that bandwagon as well. But as far as Creighton is concerned, they were tied with Kansas with about 2 minutes left. People forget that. Kansas kind of pulled away at the end. So you might not see it just by looking at the final score. But Creighton was in that game the whole time. If they have Kalkbrenner, and obviously assuming they still shoot the way they did, I think Creighton takes that game. I don't know how you can really say otherwise. Obviously, it's heavily ABU. I'm not saying it isn't.
I thought this was a terrible coach game by Bill Self because...
Maybe it was just a great game by Creighton.
They didn't have Kalkbrenner, so McCormack was trying to guard Kaluma, and he just could not do it.
Yeah, that was dumb. That was dumb.
I was begging Bill Self to put Jalen Wilson at the five to guard Kaluma and go small, but he refused to do it, and Kaluma had his way with Creighton.
Because all they did was just run. They would just run, and he probably caught four oops. I mean, it seemed like he caught so many oops. Because he's he's 200 feet past David McCormack because he's on the other side of the court.
Or when he's trying to guard him, he gets up on him to defend the three and he goes right by him.
Yeah.
And then he sags off. Oh my God, Arthur Kalumont hits a three.
Yeah.
Exactly. So as far as I'm concerned, if they have Kalkbrenner, they win that game and probably cut down the nets last night, to be honest with you guys. So.
Okay.
So a great pick by me. It maybe, like I lost, but in a way I still won, if that makes sense.
This is an elite spin cycle.
This is what I do best. Let's go on to most disappointing player of the tournament. I'll just lead it off here because I'll just say it so Wesley doesn't have to. Johnny Davis. Like, what did he do in the tournament? You know, player of the year candidate. Like, we were all sort of saying it at least in the middle of the year, towards the end of the year.
He got
really
one
cooled
of the player
off.
Of the year.
He did. But, I mean, I'm sorry. Player of the year actually steps up in those situations, especially when Chucky Hepburn gets hurt in the second round versus Iowa State. Like, you just have to step up, and he didn't. And even in the first round, he was a little quieter.
I'm going to defend him in the first round is that he made the clutch shots down the stretch.
Okay.
So he kind of...
That's against Colgate.
I know it's against Colgate. Yes, exactly. So that's why I'm not disagreeing with disappointing, because he was 4-16 from the floor against Iowa State. 9 of his 17 came at the free throw line, so that ain't going to get it done. 0-7 from 3. No, I know people are like, Giants got to step up. Yeah, obviously, he laid an egg. Obviously, he was a very disappointment for the tournament for the Badgers. But Chucky Hepburn means more to the team than you think. Because on my opinion, Johnny is not the player of the year because he is not fully versatile on offense. He is not meant to bring the ball up the court because the defense is set up and he can't slash, catch the ball, and hit the hole hard. They already have their defense. They're like, all right, come right at us. We're ready for you. So that's where his weakness in his game is he is not able to do it off the dribble when he's bringing the ball. And Brad Davidson is also not good at bringing the ball because he moves without the ball and his shoots threes. So it just put him in a pinch, and obviously Johnny Davis showed that his game is he's very athletic and can do a lot of things, but I think where he struggles most is when he's off the dribble, bringing the ball up, not catching the ball on the wing and being able to slash and kind of post himself up and make things happen.
Yeah, I'll stay with the hometown guy. This is just one player, and then I have some other guys. Justin Lewis. I don't care that they lost by 30. Justin Lewis was 2-16 from the floor, and if anyone watched that game and kept it on the entire time like I did,
Justin
Lewis was missing open layups, open threes. Marquette had decent looks. I'm not saying they would have won the game, but Justin Lewis sold. He couldn't make anything. He was awful. The only player that played good was Omax Prosper, and I never thought that those words would come out of my mouth.
You were the CEO of roasting Omax Prosper in the first half of the season.
Yes, but then on a more funny note, more sellouts. Every single player on Kentucky outside of Oscar Sheebway.
That's part of my
And mind. Every single player on Iowa outside of Keegan Murray.
Yeah. Every guard on Kentucky, Ty Washington, Kellen Grady, Sevier Wheeler, they all played so bad. I didn't do the math like I did for the three UNC players, but I would love to see what their field goal percentage between those three were, because I think Shibwe had like 25 for 30 and like 18 or something like that. Like, he couldn't have done any more than he did. Full stat line was 30-16 with 6 offense rebounds.
Yeah, I wonder if Coach Cal had a shooting practice before that game, because apparently his excuse against Tennessee for not showing up was he didn't have the guys shoot before the game.
That's such a Coach Cal response, honestly. Yeah. I'm not going to sit here and say I hate Coach Cal, but I kind of do.
Oh, I hate him.
Because that's just like, if you said like that excuse and then you listed 100, like a multiple choice of 100 college coaches and was like, who said this? I would pick Coach Cal out of that 100. It is so clear. That's such a Coach Cal thing to say.
He is kind of a known bad excuse kind
of
guy.
Yeah, it's like, wow, like, you're good at recruiting. Like, really, really cool, Coach Cal.
That seems like something, like, why would you even say that? Like, yeah, we...
Yeah, just be like, hand up. It's on me. My bad. Yeah. I'm a man. Like, that's what I said when I got 0 of the Elite Eight. Am I more of a man than Coach Cal? I would say yes.
Coach Cal getting his nuts chopped off here on the podcast. But I kind of agree with Alex. I don't really have many to add. I was going to toss in Johnny Davis as well, and mine were all the guards on Kentucky. So pretty much everybody outside of Oscar Tshiebwe. It was disappointing. But honestly, for the betterment of college basketball fans to see St. Peter's go on that run, in my opinion. Yes. Because that was well worth it.
Yeah.
Well worth it.
Now, that just about wraps up like our awards. Let's talk about some other things that happened. We've got another probably 10 minutes here to just, you know,
ramble.
Talk about it. I wanted to say one thing. TCU was the biggest lock versus Seton Hall first round. And anybody who picks Seton Hall doesn't know ball. No disrespect. Because Kevin Willard, we've already said he can't coach. And TCU was playing pretty good ball going into the tournament. Like, if you're going to bet against Eddie Lampkin, you just don't know what you're talking about.
We did say that. That is something we got right. I think I said specifically, I was like, this is my most confident pick
yes.
of the bracket, is TCU beating Seton
Hall. Of, like, the sort of toss-up games, the 7-10s, 8-9s. Every single one of us, and honestly, most people I know, had TCU in that game, yet they were the 9 seed, and I'm pretty sure Seton Hall had more, like, nationwide picks.
Yeah.
If you didn't pick TCU, I'm sorry, but you don't know ball.
Oh, another player that stunk while I'm thinking about it, Trent Frazier, was terrible.
Mm-hmm. So was...
He was terrible.
So was Plummer.
And the refs sold the Mocs. The Mocs should have won that game if it wasn't for the refs.
Well,
that's fair. You could say the same thing about Plummer, too. Plummer played like garbage.
But he at least hit a couple big shots towards the end of that game. Trent did nothing, and I think Trent's, throughout the regular season, was underrated.
Yeah,
he was really bad.
While we're sort of in that portion of the bracket, Wes, you want to talk about Houston? Because you've always been like a Houston ride or die. This was the one year you picked against them.
I learned my lesson. I picked the Blazers at UAB, and that was a mistake. Huge mistake.
But
terrible pick.
They put up a better fight than Illinois did.
They put up a better fight than Illinois. And
I still think UAB was a good team.
I think so, too.
I'm not going to – like, they would have killed Iowa. They would have killed Iowa.
That would have even been close. That would have just been a massacre. But that's a story for a different day. Houston, yeah, I learned my lesson. I'm not picking against them again. I think the last like 3 or 4 tournaments I've kind of rode Houston. I had Houston in my Final Four last year, and then the one, couple of previous I had winning 2 or 3 games. And Kelvin Sampson is an incredibly underrated coach. This team...
He's top 5.
This team was missing probably 18 to 20 points per game in Marcus Sasser and about 10 to 12 points a game in Tremont Mark. They're 2 best players, about both guards. And they were able to advance the Elite Eight, past some good teams as well, too, and blowing out teams along with it. And I think that's huge credit to Kelvin Sampson. He has completely flipped the culture, and I think he deserves – he's for sure a top 5 coach possibility. He's a top 5.
He's top 5.
He is top 5, in my opinion.
I'm glad you agree.
I think another memorable moment, now that we're talking about Kelvin Sampson, was him taking his shirt off and dancing with the players.
That was funny.
To the Sweet 16. That was awesome. He takes his shirt off, starts waving it around. He's getting drenched with water.
He's looking like Bruce Pearl. Since when did Kelvin Sampson turn into him?
That was awesome. But yeah, that Elite Eight matchup, Kelvin Sampson versus Jay Wright, doesn't get any better than that. With
I agree.
That was a great chess match. Obviously, very low scoring. Both teams could not find their shot. What was the final score? 54 to like
52? And Houston was like 1 of 20 from 3.
Yeah, they were. They shot, I think
they were worse than Wisconsin against Iowa State.
Wrong. Nope. Wisconsin was legitimately 5% from 3. I think Houston was probably 15.
Yeah.
Wisconsin was legitimately 5%
from 3.
5%. Zero. They were 5.
I'm gonna
the number.
Oh no! Someone hit a shot.
Someone hit a shot at the end.
But they were 5% the entire game, and then I think Brad hit
fact
one
check,
at the end.
You get Wisconsin. I'm getting Houston in that game.
Okay. I can just ramble about some other games while you guys are looking this stuff up. I thought Creighton beating San Diego State was just great. Didn't you guys have San Diego State in that game?
I did. Yes. Yep. That was such a
You learned your lesson.
Choke.
So that's
dude, how are you even coming at us right now, Charlie? Your bracket stunk.
Yeah, but I already put my hand up. Once again, I'm a bigger man than Coach Cal, so.
Okay, yeah, Houston was 1 of 20, exactly 5%.
Well, so was Wisconsin. Wisconsin was, nope, they were 1 of 21, so they were going to be worse. They were at 4 until Jordan Davis hit that.
It was Jordan Davis, that's who it was.
BS bank from like 30 feet away.
Yeah. And meanwhile, he's missing wide open threes. Like, come on.
Jordan Davis needs to play better next year.
The hell did Wisconsin bring in for a period of time?
Okay, this needs to be looked up because I
you know who I'm talking about.
I know exactly who
you're
talking about.
I didn't see him play a single minute at all in the regular season.
Isaac Lindsay.
Nor did I. I was watching the game with my. I was watching the game in person with my brother, and he's a big college basketball fan, but obviously he doesn't go here like we do, so he doesn't know the Badgers like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he knows all the bench guys. But then this guy comes in, he's like, "Who's that guy?" And I was like, "I don't know. I don't know."
I mean, this guy played like.
probably averaged 1 minute, 1.5 minutes.
Exactly. I think he probably averaged less, you guys. Or maybe the 1.5 minutes when they would, you know, run out the clock against Juwan Howard. But, yeah. Another thing I wanted to talk about, Michigan State should have beat Duke.
Texas Tech.
I think Duke got some lucky shots, really. And Michigan State should have won that game. They choked that game. And then that would have been a great pick by me. And then I would be able to flaunt my Elite Eight pick.
I picked that too.
No, because Texas Tech would have said no. That would have been a better matchup for Texas Tech, in my opinion.
No.
Yes.
I don't really.
No.
Michigan State would have made an Elite Eight run, and it would have been great.
Living in the world of ABU.
I was all four on the 5-12 matchups. Me too. Two games I picked the 5, the 12 one, and the two games I picked the 12, the 5 one. So that just stinks all around.
It totally sucks. I had, what was it? I had UConn, UAB, Iowa, and who's the bottom left 5-12?
Indiana. I mean, what sellouts. They lost by like 30 to St. Mary's, who I guess is worth a damn these days. Like, honestly.
No, not really.
Oh, St. Mary's had a good team. Like, you guys can say I'm chalk or whatever. I didn't pick a single 12, but honestly, the two 12s that did win, those would have been the last 12s I picked.
Well, for me, well,
that's
too,
exactly
obviously,
what we're saying.
Because I had Indiana and UAB, so those I would have picked for sure. I'm picking New Mexico State ahead of Richmond. No questions asked.
Yeah, I agree.
The fact that Richmond,
honestly, I feel like, you know, now that we know everything, we forget. Iowa was like the trendy Final Four pick going in.
Yes,
I strongly considered it. Picking them, I was sending Iowa or Kansas to the Final Four.
I almost put Iowa over Creighton in my Elite Eight, and I'm so glad I didn't because, you know, now I'm right. But
no, but I really thought this was the year that multiple 13 seeds could win. I thought the Jackrabbits had a good chance.
I did too.
I thought the Mox had a good chance, and Vermont. And none of
I wasn't
won.
Fooled by any of those games. I'd just like to put that out
you
there.
You were fooled by the Jackrabbits.
Oh, I was fooled by the Jackrabbits. You're right.
Never bet against Cooley. Friars.
Let's talk about Friars. Another just like lock of locks. Murray State was never losing to San Francisco. And if you pick
How
San Francisco.
How can you even say that? I picked the Dons and the Dons. Okay, maybe they shouldn't have won that game.
But it
went to overtime. How can you say they were a lock?
It was just
century?
A lock. Like, there was no world in which Murray State was losing that game. You can't convince me otherwise. It was a lock. I would have bet my life savings on it.
Charlie's saying all 10 picks that he got right were locks. Not including the 16 seeds.
And Creighton. Creighton was also the pick I got right. But anyways. Yeah. Like, I mean, Murray State was never losing that game. That was a lock. You actually changed your pick to San Francisco?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, then I'll say.
What a lame pick.
Miami was a lock.
Yes. Okay, I agree.
I agree.
No, USC got hosed by the refs. Granted,
what?
I granted.
You didn't even watch the game.
Alex,
you were looking
I told
at
you,
Twitter.
I was driving home from Florida, so I can't watch the game. I need to be a safe driver and keep my ass on the road.
And I would say that the refs were in favor of USC.
When it was my turn to stop driving, all entire Twitter feed just being blown up. Oh my gosh, USC got hosed by the refs. So, I am going to take the
Charlie
word of 100 Moore, people compared to
Charlie
one.
Moore just dropped his nuts in USC's face.
Whatever, you're wrong, but that's okay. Any other games you want to talk about before we wrap this up?
Nothing to add for me.
Arkansas next year is going to be so good if Jalen Williams comes back.
Where would he go? He's in
the league.
Really? Is he? I don't know. I haven't dug into the Jalen Williams NBA scene.
But they have the second best recruiting class coming in next year.
Really?
They're going to be so good. They got Devo Davis, Odise Toney, and possibly Jalen Williams coming back.
Plus a good recruiting class and
yes,
Coach M.
Muscle.
In the future, we might have like a recruiting episode. We always sort of say that.
I think this year is worth it to do a transfers episode because with the new NIL rules.
As you guys know with us at this point in time, nothing's a guarantee for Maiden March with our schedules. So we'll try to drop something in the future.
We'll get better once school ends.
Yes.
Like in the summer, we'll definitely come out with a
transfer/recruiting. A
transfers
episode. Extravaganza of sorts.
Yes.
But yeah, it was fun March Madness as every year is. No matter how bad your bracket stinks, no matter what low percentile you're in, it's just a good time.
Yeah, you always have the next game, you can always pick a team, normally the underdog, that you just love to
ride. Just ride or die, like
exactly.
St. Peter's. I didn't have them winning
exactly.
any games.
Or UNC for me once they beat Baylor. It was ride.
It was fun.
Are you telling me you were rooting for UNC over the Cox, the Peacocks?
No, obviously, but I'm saying, yes. Obviously, the Peacocks were, that's a different story.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to add. You guys?
Until next year, baby.
Not until next year. We're having a summer episode. But
you did
until probably sometime in mid-July.
One to 2 to 3 months.
This is made in March.